This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Hi, this is 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. I'm Mike Dean with Kansas City Move to Amend. This Thursday evening, March 5th at 7 p.m., at the UMKC Student Union Theater, Mainstream Coalition, and the UMKC Economics Club will be joining with KC Move to Amend to show Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes, the important new film about the insidious and far-reaching effects of money in politics and what we can do about it right now. I'm pleased now to welcome the director of Pay to Play, Garth Wellington Ennis. Hello, Garth.
Hey, it's John.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem. Garth Ennis is the far more acclaimed comic book maker, which I wish I was.
You can see where I got confused.
We do have some comics in this film that I think all will enjoy. Thank you very much for having me, Mike.
Yes, John, I apologize for that. Obviously, you saw exactly where I got confused.
You betrayed your comic book geekness, I'm afraid.
Yes, the secret is out. All right, well, what does this mean, pay to play?
Well, I wanted to make this film because I realized that there is this cycle of money in politics where it's not just that you see politicians with their hands out taking huge sums of money from billionaires and corporations, but they're getting paid back. And it's not just the politicians, they're paying them back, you know, out of their own pockets. They're paying them back out of the public pocket. Taxes, no bid contracts, letting them hide all of their money offshore, still doing unregulated business in our country. And when they're getting paid back, this amount of money comes in a huge amount in the form of a return on investment. And so, as Jack Abramoff told me when I interviewed him for this film, you know, for millions or tens of millions, you know, he could get his clients billions back and as a return on investment. And so that cycle is what I wanted to illustrate. And so to me, that's what pay to play means, because it's really both parties that operate under this rule system.
Yeah, the movie says that the average return on investment for political donors is about 22,000%.
Yes, and actually on the state level, it's twice that. It's pretty remarkable that there can be so much to be able to gain by outright rigging the rule system that we're all playing under. And once people start to understand that, you know, it's not like people are lobbying just, you know, for the goodness of their heart. You know, there's no one lobbying really in that same way for you and me as there are for people to be able to maintain
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activists in our
community. I'm sorry, we're having technical difficulties?
No, not at all.
All right, we're all set.
I'm glad to be here.
All right, so, John, tell us about how the Supreme Court, how Citizens United came before the Supreme Court and the results of that decision.
You know, the Supreme Court's disastrous decision in the Citizens United case is like one of those things that started as a snowball that rolled into a huge landslide over the course of decades. Citizens United was founded by Floyd Brown, who was one of the co-creators of the infamous Willie Horton Act that ran against Dukakis in the 88 campaign. Once he took what he learned from that highly effective, poisonous ad into his own nonprofit that would create outside media to buttress these right-wing viewpoints, Citizens United grew over the decades by creating these sort of right-wing home videos, eventually leading to this opportunity to run hit ads on Hillary Clinton during her primary campaign in New Hampshire, knowing that this was in violation of FEC laws for a nonprofit to be running ads 30 days out of an election. That triggered this court case, Citizens United FEC. I mean, ultimately, it could have been decided for an allowance of something as simple as, well, it's a video-on-demand movie. Maybe it's not really the same as a political attack ad. We can make an exception for that. But instead, by the time it reached the Supreme Court, Chief Justice John Roberts took this very curious interest in the case and decided to make it into something much greater and said, you know what, why don't you go back and come back to me later in the fall with these much bigger decisions, with these much bigger questions that I'm giving you now, which is, how can you regulate corporate speech at all if we're thinking speech is the equivalent of money in elections? And so by the time they returned, they argued precisely what Justice Roberts had put forth to them. And they came out with this overarching ruling that spans, that took out generations of campaign finance. And so it was really in the Supreme Court's own prerogative that it took this devious turn for what otherwise would have been sort of a sideshow of a right-wing home video movie company.
Yeah, that's and things have just gotten worse since then. The movie illustrates just how much time candidates have to devote to raising money. If you're going to try to get a U.S. House seat, you need to raise $1.5 million. You need $10 million for a Senate seat. Have you heard that here in the state of Missouri, St. Louis billionaire Rex Sinkfeld just donated $1 million to a Republican candidate for lieutenant governor?
No. Oh, how can you...
Yes.
$1 million directly to the campaign, or just, you know, outside spending?
I believe it was to the campaign. There are no limits in Missouri to political donations. You just have
it's
to.
It's just getting ostentatious, you know.
Exactly.
And I think the hard part about it is that it's turning off people to the democratic process and wanting to participate or take any of it seriously. Not just they didn't care before, but looking at a lot of the Supreme Court's bizarre reasonings about some of the cases that they're hearing just this very week, it would make a lot of people to think not just, oh, it's not just out of my hands, but these guys are idiots. They're just like, they're really trying to do whatever they want, and they know they're being jerks. And so the danger is that people check out. And so why I wanted to make my film is to show people not only that we can make a difference, but that the little actions that we've been a part of in just over the last few years have had huge ramifications. And it, you know, in the course of making this film, you know, we didn't know publicly who the Koch brothers were. We didn't know who Alec was.
Right.
And then, you know, that's part of what I wanted to be able to show was not just a good explanation of these organizations, but the ability to show that how they even came to light is the result of activism, independent journalism, and people power.
Yeah, one of the co-founders of ALEC is quoted in the movie as saying it, he doesn't want everyone to vote. He says, our leverage in election goes up as the voting populace goes down. Tell us about ALEC.
Well, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, was founded in part by Paul Weyrich, in the 1970s, as a response to this surge in civic participation, particularly in working towards the environment. And so these larger business interests were sort of egged on by the Powell memo, which was this memorandum that yep. dictated how a larger business influence could be built over the American democratic process. And so in the wake of the Powell memo, American Legislative Exchange Council was founded to be able to put state legislators in touch with corporations and their lobbyists to be able to come up with essentially corporate-sponsored legislation. And they do this while supposedly under the guise of a nonprofit claiming that they do no lobbying whatsoever, when in fact that's precisely what they're doing. It's a lobbying boutique. It's like a matchmaker system. And so they take lawmakers to, well-heeled Kush retreat and let them be seduced into taking huge privatization bills, for instance, that they don't even read and bring back into their state or city. And these will be something that's literally just put in your state here kind of legislation. Yeah. And so it's very insidious to see how much of our American public works has already been picked off bit by bit by this scheming privatization monster called ALEC.
Yeah, but let's not get this wrong. The movie is a lot of fun. You actually directed a movie with Amy Poehler a few years back called Wild Girls Gone. So you bring you bring a sense of humor to this subject. You cover the history.
Well, my background is in comedy, and I started to realize during the Bush years that there were so many important things going on, and particularly sort of a dissonance in the media, that I wanted to find ways to get past the polarization and be able to talk about the important issues that are really facing us without the divisions that are typically thrown at us. And so my last film, Free for All, was a way to explore the legitimacy of how our elections are run in the wake of Ohio 2004's presidential election. And while I was investigating voter suppression and election fraud there in Ohio, trying to figure out how to make that into a funny, relatable film, I happened to come across these candidates who were so promising and so surreal, trying to run for office as outsiders in Ohio, that I realized, if people saw that there are other people like this even trying, then they would be inspired. But it's not just that. Why aren't these guys able to get anywhere, And it's not just any one thing, Unfortunately, you'd like to be able to say it's all the money. And if they just had a bunch of money, if you give them $1 million, then they'd be able to do it. But, it's party politics. It's, the way the political winds are blowing at that time. It's personality. It's gerrymandering. So that became this larger issue of the film of how do we talk about all these other things to tie together in this pay-to-play system.
Yeah, and the movie ends with six steps for ending this pay-to-play system, and the sixth and final one is passing an amendment that corporations are not people and money is not speech. That is precisely the mission of Move to Amend, and why is that so important?
Well, when you look particularly at the Supreme Court, who is looking to take whatever latitude they see fit to impose a conservative corporate agenda on existing law in America, you realize that there's no amount of small action that you can show down to the Supreme Court that's going to be in place for a while. And so this is an argument that we've had before, but we get to make that much more yardage this time by passing this amendment. And so the ghost of corporate personhood is something that's going to continue to come up no matter what in different aspects. And so until we get this clear that money is not speech in elections, money is property, and corporations are not people, people are people, and members of corporations can still participate in elections as members of a corporation, then we can really start to have these people who are American citizens want to participate again. I think they need this to know that their system can work, and we can do it.
Yes, we can. And again, it's a fun movie. There, you cover the history of the game Monopoly, and you follow some subversive street artists. You yourself become a subversive street artist.
There's a lot of different ways that I wanted to be able to reflect the themes in a visual way and an emotional context that would parallel these larger themes of the corporate takeover of the public space and the public election process and the public domain of our content. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to have enough sort of misadventures over the several years that I was making this film about campaign finance to be able to find the right way to weave my life in and out at just the right amount, thankfully, so that I'm more of a guide around this sort of pay-to-play board that we show. It's like a larger Monopoly board.
Yeah.
That we use to show the audience around all these different issues that we touch on in the film so that they can see how they're all connected.
Yeah, and as I said, it's a lot of fun, and we're going to have some fun this this Thursday evening, March 5th at 7 p.m. at the UMKC Student Union Theater. As I said, Mainstream Coalition and the UMKC Economics Club will be joining with Kansas City Move to Amend and a number of other very important organizations to show pay-to-play democracy's high stakes. I really appreciate John Wellington Ennis speaking with us today. And thanks very much, John.
Oh, Mike, thanks so much for having me and for sharing this movie with so many other people.
All right, great. And hopefully we'll see some people at on Thursday night. Have a great day.
You guys look fun.
All right.
Thanks.
You're listening to Radioactive Magazine on KKFI 90.1 FM. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Sharon Lockhart's interview about women. Here we go.
This is Sharon Lockhart with Amy Bell from Every Woman. We're producing a segment for Radioactive Magazine with the UNAGKC women. We have with us Stacey Caro, who is chair of the Women's Committee, and Gina Egan, a board member. And they have recently hosted an International Women's Day, the second event, in fact, since their organization formed. And we've invited them here to talk a little bit about the UNA women and what it means to be a part of that and the good that they're doing. Gina, do you want to start?
Well, thank you so much for having us here today. We're very excited about the work that we've been doing with the UNA Women Committee, and especially about the event that we just had a few days ago for International Women's Day.
Good. I understand you had a speaker in town from the UN.
We did. We had Mr. A.H. Manjaro Kabir. He is program advisor for Asia and the Pacific for UN Women. And he spoke to our audience. We also had a performance from Gigi Harris, who was performing on stilts. And we had a poet, Natasha Ria Elskari. And so it was a great event. I think it's a great way to celebrate International Women's Day.
What is International Women's Day?
International Women's Day was founded many years ago in 1911 to celebrate the accomplishments of women, and is something that is celebrated still today in many, many countries all around the world. It's an official holiday in 27 countries, and in some countries it is equivalent status of Mother's Day. In some countries, women get the day off work. Gifts are given to women. There will be parades, celebrations, events such as like the ones we have. It's both a time to celebrate women as much as it is a time to take a look at while we're still calling for greater equality for women.
Right, and the work that we still have to do. So that's why I think the event is great, is because we celebrate women, we have female artists, a poet, performer, and then we also talk about all that we still have left to do for women in the world. So our speaker brought up a few points that I thought were kind of interesting from his perspective. He entitled his talk, Going Beyond the Minimum, and he talked about having a holistic approach to all of the programs that they do. He said that he felt that women's access to resources and equality can be hampered because there's often no vision in their work. I guess donors to some of their programs often want to see a quick result, so they don't always have a long-term vision or strategy, and he thought that was really important. The example that he gave for that was for domestic violence, you can't just have a hotline and a shelter. You must also have economic empowerment programs and education for women and even boys or and men. So it's really important to have a complete vision. So that's one of the things that he talked about.
It is amazing how often men and boys are left out of this equation about the problems that women have, when often the problems derive from the men. So I'm happy to hear that he was recognizing that men and boys need to be educated.
Well, and on that same vein, did they talk any about the UN campaign for men, the He for She?
The He for She campaign. We did bring up that campaign. We wanted to hopefully gain greater interest in it, as we are hoping to pursue that and do some events for the He for She campaign here in Kansas City. The He for She campaign is focused on helping men, encouraging men, half of the population, to support the other half of the population as we reach for greater equality around the world. And so we did have a call out to our audience with the recognition that equality for women, as well as ending violence against women and all of those issues, is a community problem, and it takes the whole community in order to solve it, including men. And recognition of gender inequality affects all genders, including things like men hearing things like boys don't cry and what have you. So when we look at gender equality across the spectrum, then it allows each individual to express their individuality. And that includes women and respect for women and gaining inequality in areas of the workplace and government, etc.
Absolutely. Every male that has a working spouse, a wife, should be just enraged at the fact that women are making 72, 75, 77 cents to the dollar. That's an economic impact on the family when a woman can't bring home an equal salary to a man.
There's still a lot of disbelief that that is even true. As I've talked to people on a day-to-day basis, usually the argument is not that women should be paid less. It's that there are still people who don't believe that that is even true.
Well, and what we're talking about is that's if the woman has the same job description working in the same office with as much or more education. That's not even taking into account the wages of the secretary to the male CEO. And I mean, just the how women's traditional jobs are such downgrades from male jobs, considered less than. But how can you justify paying a male dentist more than a female dentist? But it's done all the time.
It is hard to believe, actually. It is very hard to believe. How does that happen?
I think that disbelief may be why there is so much disbelief. It does. Yeah. It sounds counterintuitive that that could happen in our society.
Perhaps the Equal Rights Amendment would be the answer to that. Maybe they wouldn't get away with it if we were able to pass the Equal Rights Amendment in the United States.
Well, is there? There's an equivalent of the United Nations,
right? The convention, CEDAW, the Convention to Eliminate the Discrimination Against Women. It's an important convention, and of course we haven't ratified that either here in the U.S. So even if we already have some of those laws and standards here in the U.S., I think it's important to show the progress and to the rest of the world a signal.
I think it's difficult for the United States to say that they're a leader in the area when they're one of, I think, like two countries that have not ratified, or at least it's a really small number of countries, and they're only Western country that has not ratified some of these propositions that show that talk about women being equal within that nation, and yet the United States refuses to ratify these, and so it's difficult to say that we're a leader in that area.
Well, the United States actually lags behind a lot of the other member nations in areas such as family leave and child care. Are those type of issues things that are addressed in CEDAW?
I think that they are, and I think there's another important landmark agreement. It's the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action that also addresses issues like these. That platform actually addressed 12 critical areas of concern. I'll name a few of them. Women and the environment, women in power and decision-making, women and the economy, education and training of women, women in health, women in the media, etc. So this year is actually, it's been 20 years since this platform was ratified. And at this year's Commission on the Status of Women, which will be taking place, I guess, in a couple of weeks, it'll be 2 weeks in New York, they'll be reviewing the Beijing platform to see where we are since it was ratified 20 years ago.
And you'll be attending that.
I will, and when we get back, we're actually going to have a March 30th meeting to discuss what we learned and what kind of came out of the event. I'm only going to be able to attend the first few days. I can't go the whole time. It's 2 weeks. But we will have a meeting at March 30th from 5:30 to 7:30 at Bluebird Bistro. So we'll be talking about what we learned while we were in New York and give a little bit of the history, more of the history of it.
And where is the Bluebird Bistro?
It's in the West Side. I don't have the address.
I think it's around 18th and Summit.
Sounds right, yeah. Yeah. And we would like an RSVP if anyone's interested in coming. It's unawomenkc@gmail.com.
And so what are we doing here locally with the UNA Women? And is there local efforts to kind of help make sure that some of these ideas from the UN are on track with helping women in the metro area?
Well, our group is supporting the efforts of the people who've been working on Cities for CEDAW, which is a local initiative to ratify, I guess, or resolve to apply the CEDAW initiatives in our city. And since the federal government, of course, hasn't ratified it, we thought we can start locally and make sure that at least here in Kansas City, we have the same standards as CEDAW. So that's one thing that I think is really important. For our group, we're doing a lot of programs. We think it's really important for our programs that we talk about international issues, UN issues, international issues for women, since, you know, that's kind of our focus. But also, since we're part of this community, we think it's really important that our programs, for the most part, can have a local segment, too, so that we know that what's happening here to women in Kansas City, a lot of the same issues apply to women all over the world. So it's not just happening in other parts of the world, like pay equity. That's happening here too, for instance.
Our mission for UNA Women here in Kansas City, our mission is to provide a voice, raise awareness, and inspire change for women and girls locally and globally. And so our events that we do are around that mission, whether it's having experts come in and talk about violence against women that's happening here in Kansas City, or violence against women that's happening in Israel, whether it's supporting local performers and artists like we did at the event that we just had for International Women's Day, where we highlighted some local artists. Molly Murphy, Julie Bond, and Noor Higley had their artwork in the space, and Alma Habib had her photography photographs in the space. And then we had a wonderful young female performer. She's a freshman in high school, and she performed, she did a dance on stilts. She's part of the Quixotic Performing Arts School, and so that was wonderful. And then, of course, the poet that was mentioned earlier, Natasha Ria Elskari, having her come and lend her voice of just deep femininity and strength, and being right here from Kansas City, so highlighting local, and then the UN Women speaker for the international view as well.
And what is that website where people can get more information?
About UNA Women? It's una-kc.org.
And March 30 is your next event at 5:30 at the Bluebird Bistro.
Mm-hmm, that's
after
right.
You come back with a wealth of knowledge from the conference, the UN conference,
yes.
Revisiting Beijing 20 years.
Yes.
I've butchered that, but something like that.
Yeah, there will be a few of us going from Kansas City. So I'm very excited. There are going to be so many things to hear about and so many things to attend. It's going to be really exciting. I think Hillary Clinton's going to be there. So that could be very exciting if I get to see her.
If you're interested, the official title of the conference Stacy is going to is the 59th Forum of the Commission on the Status of Women.
And I want to thank Amy for being here with us today in engineering, and because we're pre-recording this on Sunday snowy afternoon, and we're lucky that the snow didn't keep us from doing this. We're here with Stacy Caro, the chair of the UNA Women's Committee, and Gina Egan, a board member. And they are very active in promoting the well-being rights of women in Kansas City area.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activists in our community. If you'd like more information or like to comment on this program, call Bill Claus at 816-994-7869.